Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We will kickstart with our meeting. The purpose of this meeting is to look at this subject, cost to communicate. It's a topical matter is almost everyone's, or it's in everyone's interest in the country, especially for the consumers of the telecoms products. Perhaps we should allow for a quick introductions, but first I should tender the apologies of the Minister, the Deputy Minister, as well as the DG. If I can allow Umamu Julie Killian will also be joining us later. She's attending to her health matters, so she'll be joining us. There's one member missing. She was around. Mam Dongeni still? Yes, she's outside. Okay. So we are full strength. We only missing Mam Julie. I guess everyone attending already knows all these members. I mean, they are now coming to the end of their term. They should definitely be known to everyone. But can we allow for yourselves, Madam Councillor, to introduce your team, and the department can do the same, and whoever else who is present, anyone with a mic in front of him or herself can do that.
Okay, thanks, Chair, and thanks, members. ICASA appreciates the opportunity to share the work that we've been doing on the cost to communicate. My delegation is made out of myself, Councillor Botlenyana Mokgele. On my right is Owen Mutlanga, and on my left is the CEO, Blinton Nwepe. Thank you.
Madam Masumu.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Mamesu Masamola. I'm from the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. We have to my left, Ms. Adelaide Masemola. She's a director responsible for economic analysis in the department. And we have Mr. Batando Mlambo. He's in ministry responsible for parliamentary and cabinet liaison, as well as Mr. Vukani Mtembu, who is also in the ministry. Thank you.
Anyone else who needs to do the introduction?
Good morning, I'm Michael from PMG.
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, all the guests. My name is Christopher, and I'm representing an organization called Sabinet, and I do parliamentary monitoring. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members, and everyone here today. My name is Rosanna Gell, and I represent MTN Regulatory Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Andrew Barenser, and I represent Vodacom.
Morning, everybody. I'm Kanya Samazumwane, also from Vodacom.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. I'm Tanya Abraham from CETA.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Carmenita Dudley, Telcom.
Morning, Chairperson, honourable members. Denzel Bowman, Liquid Telecom.
Good morning. I'm Francois Williams. I'm a journalist from Netwerk Fidentona.
Morning, Chair. My name is Ezeko from OIZ.
From?
OIZ.
Can you unpack that?
Office supporting democracy.
Thank you.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Renzi Musetedi representing MTN.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Moses Mashisane from MTN.
Thank you.
We will kickstart with our meeting. Shall I... who's doing the presentation? Yourself or the... Okay, between you and the department or and the CEO. You can proceed, madam.
Thank you, Chair. As I've indicated, we really appreciate this opportunity for ICASA to share progress that we've made in relation to the cost to communicate program. And that's the outline of our presentation. I will go through the first 3 points, and the CEO of ICASA will then take us through the rest of the presentation. As I start, I'd like to reiterate ICASA's mandate and goals. As you know, we are an independent regulator established in terms of Section 192 of the Constitution. Our mandate is derived from several pieces of legislation, including the ICASA Act, the EC Act, the Broadcasting Act, the Postal Services Act, and the ECT Act. And in terms of our goals, we have 5 main goals. The first being to promote investment in broadband infrastructure. The second one is to promote competition, precisely with the aim of reducing the cost to communicate. The third is to foster common national identity and social cohesion. We intend to do this by increasing the number of broadcasting platforms that South Africans can access. The fourth being to be an independent and credible regulator, which means that we strive to adhere to regulatory principles of transparency, accountability, independence, and integrity, and predictability in the decisions that we make in the public interest. And the last one is to improve stakeholder and consumer experience by monitoring, amongst others, monitoring quality of services, of ICT services. This slide actually, ICASA took a programmatic approach to deal with the cost to communicate. This program has 4 main pillars by way of regulations, but there's also complementary measures that are in place that we use to support the 4 pillars. The first pillar was a review of call termination rates from the ones that we had in 2014. That project has been complete, and the CEO further down the presentation will go into detail to indicate the benefits that can be derived from that process. The second one is the amendment of the end user subscriber charter. The aim of this was to address data expiry and out-of-bundle business rules. The third was a priority market study, which we have completed, and from the study we identify 3 main markets for ICASA's regulatory intervention. The first market was mobile services market. The second one is wholesale fixed access market. The third is the upstream infrastructure market. Following that process, ICASA then... Oh, okay. No, that's fine. I'll do that. We are going to describe it in detail later in the presentation, but I'll go ahead and assist. The mobile services market speaks to the retail market for mobile services and the wholesale supply of mobile network services. The wholesale fixed access market includes wholesale supply of asymmetric broadband origination, fixed access services, and the 11 services. The last one, the upstream infrastructure market, incorporates national transmission services and metropolitan connectivity and the relevant markets to that market. So based on the market prioritization exercise, ICASA then prioritized the mobile market for regulatory intervention. Last year, we issued a notice indicating our intention to do an inquiry into the mobile services market, and that is in progress. I spoke earlier on complementary measures, which is the work that ICASA does on a regular basis. The work has the effect of supporting the specific regulatory projects that I spoke to earlier. We do a biannual tariff analysis, which we use to monitor the prices for the cost to communicate. The last one was published when? The last one is going to be published before the end of the financial year. The second measure that we're looking to implement is to license the high demand spectrum. The third is also a normal administrative routine work that ICASA does, which is to publish an annual report on the state of ICTs. The fourth measure, which we are collaborating with the Competition Commission, we're supporting the inquiry that's currently underway. And the last measure that ICASA views as complementary to our regulatory function is actually consumer activism and moral suasion. Since the program has started, I've mentioned the four pillars. We've managed to complete the first three, which is the review for call termination rates. We've amended the end user subscriber charter. The regulations are due to come into effect on the 1st of March. We've completed the priority market study and the mobile. We're currently dealing with the mobile. However, the market itself has also, we've seen quite a bit of movement around pricing. Very recently, from the 17th of January, MTN has adjusted its out-of-bundle data rates. The effect has been that the out-of-bundle rates by MTN have been reduced to 29 cents for customers who are non-bundle users and 49 cents to customers who use data bundles.
That's the
name mark. Sorry?
The
name mark. Yes. So, and then Cell C has also instituted some changes in terms of their data plans. They've replaced the 500 megabits, which was 99 cents, with the 750 megabits, which is now priced at 100 rand. So it's an increase, somehow, of 50%. In data for the additional 1 rand, so there's been a 1% increase. Rain has also launched a data-only services, and for that they charge 5 cents per megabyte, which is 50 rand for 1 megabit. They've also introduced a no-contract package, SIM delivery and cost to the tune of 120 rand, and they don't have any out-of-bundle rates. I think this slide we've shared with the committee quite a number of times. What it does is it speaks to factors that potentially affect the price of data, and it has to do mainly, those factors mainly have to do with the cost of setting up an infrastructure and operating an infrastructure. The first one is the radio frequency spectrum availability. The second one is rise of way. Third, topography. The fourth is access to network infrastructure, and this speaks to issues like facilities, leasing and sharing. The fifth is market structure. The sixth is market player behavior, and this speaks to competition dynamics in the sector. The next one is economic conditions, and this basically talks to the price that operators have to pay for setting up infrastructure. So where there's energy cost, it's access to capital, etc. The next one is technological factors, and the last being suboptimal policy and regulatory framework. So all these factors actually affect in the ultimate the cost of data. The Competition Commission is currently undertaking an inquiry to see to what extent these are, and the same applies to ICASA. The reason why we're flagging them is it's those factors that do affect the cost to communicate. Now I'll now hand over to the CEO to do the rest of the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Chair, I think perhaps before I go into the details, maybe just to set the brief context on the benchmark study. Chair, the data that's included in this slide is valid as of end of December. As Councillor Makhale indicated, there's been a few changes recently by operators implementing changes. So the data is valid as of end of December. The second point that I think I need to highlight when it comes to benchmarks, Chair, is that no two countries can ever be the same. So as much as we conduct in the benchmarks, we just want to get a sense of how we compare to other countries. We are not in any way suggesting that we are fine. I think it's important then, Chair, to highlight that the regulatory frameworks in all of these countries is likely to be different. The coverage conditions in these countries are going to be different. The amount of spectrum assigned in these countries will also be different. What we have included here, Chair, is the benchmark for SADC, how we compare to SADC countries. But the Chair would recall that in the data that we previously submitted for the hearings that were supposed to be in November, we had included the data pertaining to how we compare to BRICS. We had also included the data pertaining to how we compare to the countries where our operators have operations, specifically MTN. We looked at some of the markets that they operate in, as well as Vodacom and or Vodafone Group. We didn't include that data in this slide, Chair, simply because we couldn't get the updated information. In terms of this slide, Chair, what we're showing there is the SADC prices for 500 megabytes package. And that slide basically shows that we are not the most expensive, neither are we the cheapest. So Botswana comes out tops as the most expensive market for a 500 megabyte package, with Mozambique being the lowest. But again, Chair, taking into account that countries are by their very nature different and the markets are different. But this just illustrates that when we compare ourselves to our peers within SADC, taking that package in particular, we are not the most expensive, but neither are we the cheapest. The second package we looked at, Chair, is the 1 gig prepaid data bundle. Again, even on this front, we do not have the lowest priced 1 gig bundle. We came out number 3 across all of SADC, with the lowest being the DRC. And we've also just highlighted the how our most expensive 1 gig bundle compares to everybody else. So we are higher than the DRC, as I've said. We are higher than Lesotho, we are higher than Malawi, Mauritius, Mozambique, and Tanzania. But then when we compare ourselves to Angola, Botswana, Seychelles, Zambia, Zimbabwe, we are lower. And as I say, Chair, this is not to say that we're fine. It's just to give a sense of how we compare. It could very well be that as much as we are not the most expensive and we are not the cheapest, the prices still needs to be addressed. It does not necessarily mean that we are fine. When it comes to voice, Chair, I think that the key message on this slide is just to say that there has been very minimal changes in terms of the headline tariffs that have been filed with ICASA between 2013 and 2018. And this one specifically talks to the on-net tariffs. So, Chair, you, as I said, this data is valid as of end of December. It doesn't take account of the recent changes that might have occurred in the market. So, in terms of the key highlights, Chair, on this specific slide, we highlighted that Vodacom had increased its tariffs for the daily free tariff plan by 2.5% as a result of the 1% VAT increase. So overall, there hasn't been too much fluctuations in the prices. We only saw that fluctuation when the VAT rate went up. MTN's top free tariff plan was priced differently between 2018 and 2017. And in 2018, then MTN made a decision to stop the price differential and charge a flat rate for on-net and off-net tariff plans. And the headline tariff that was filed for that plan is 1.20. Telkom still has the differential, charging 29 cents per minute for on-net calls and charging 79 cents per minute for off-net. Cell C does not necessarily have on-net focused tariff plans. They offer a flat rate across both off-net and on-net calls. As I said, Chair, on this slide, we're just reiterating again the data that the flat rate tariff has remained unchanged, specifically when it comes to Vodacom, since 2013. And there was a slight change as a result of the VAT increase last year. But as of October 2018, there was a new flat rate tariff plan which was filed of 79 cents that applied across networks. And that's obviously a reduction in terms of that pricing structure. So it remained unchanged over the past 5 years at 66 cents. And MTN reduced its anytime second flat rate tariff plan by 32%. Looking at the at the trends when it comes to data prices over between the period 2013 to 2018, we know that the three operators, Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C, had similar prices for their 1 gig bundle, which was at 149. Telkom had a price structure of 100 rand per 1 gig, and as Councillor Mukhele indicated, the latest entrant in the market had the cheapest price for a 1 gig bundle of 50 rand, which is rare. Chair, I think this slide basically just illustrates that the prices have remained constant, so to speak. And this, again, I must emphasize, talks to the headline tariffs that are filed. The industry obviously has a lot of promotions that they launched in the market, and those promotions, in effect, have the effect of dropping the rates. So you would find that as much as the headline tariff that is filed is indicated as per the slide, all the promotions that are launched in the market then give the consumers the benefit of a lower price. But the promotions are not permanent, and as such, I think, Chair, it's important that when the committee applies its mind to the slide, it just sits at the back of the committee members' mind that the real price, so the effective price that might be in the market might be lower than the headline tariff that's filed. I think the other slide that is there just reiterates the point in a different format. I'll move to the slide on the cost to communicate, specifically on the call termination rate. What this slide aims to show, Chair, is that between 2006 and 2016. Obviously, with the data updated for the last amendment to the call termination regulations last year, we're trying to show the trend in voice prices. vis-a-vis the interventions that were made in reducing the call termination rate. So the call termination rate is the rate that operators charge each other to terminate the calls originating from a different network on their own network. And this is one of the significant input costs to the rate that the operator would charge its consumer for the voice call terminated. So since the review in 2014, we have seen a significant drop check in the effective rate per call. So the graph on that side shows the Vodacom average price per minute as well as the MTN average price per minute, with the bottom figure of 13 cents being the call termination rate. So you'll see that if you look at the 155 at the top, that's where it starts, and that's the Vodacom average price per minute in 2006. The price goes down, and it goes down in line with the call termination rate dropping. So the essence of the slide here is to say that because of the interventions that have been implemented in dropping the call termination rate, we have seen the retail price of a call coming down over the period. So there has been some effectiveness in the regulatory measures that have been implemented. But yeah, that only talks to voice, and I think the outcry at the moment is primarily around the price of data services as opposed to voice services. And we're hoping that the interventions that are being undertaken now in respect of the inquiry that's underway will result with the same effectiveness that we have seen in the voice call termination market. Yeah, the next slide talks to the regulation that is due to come into force at the end of this month, which is the amendment to the End User and Subscriber Service Charter. These amendments were effected during 2018 following an extensive consultation process with industry players and consumer bodies. And they were mainly aimed at addressing concerns around certain business practices which we deemed to be unfair. And those business practices, in essence, related to expiry of data and the pricing practices for out-of-bundle data usage. The amendments that were introduced implemented four key pro-consumer measures. The first measure was that there should be usage notification. And in terms of that requirement, we're requiring that all licensees should notify consumers of their data depletion. They must notify you when you get to 50%, 80%, as well as 100%. And the ultimate goal is just to enable consumers to monitor their usage and control their spend and avoid an instance where people are shocked at the end when they're presented with huge bills. The other intervention that was implemented relates to the rollover of data. And in this regard, we're saying that operators are required to grant consumers an option to transfer or to roll over any unused data to the next cycle. And the idea here is that we need to limit the loss of data that the consumers have had to experience over the years with the expiry rules. The same applies to transfer of data. This is requiring that licensees allow consumers to transfer data to other users on the same network. And again, it's aimed at curbing the expiry of data that is not used by allowing the customer to just pass it on to benefit someone else on the same network. Then there is the rule around out-of-bundle billing. In this one, Chair, we say that operators should not automatically default people to out-of-bundle data usage when you finish your bundle. The new rule is that they must inform you that your bundle is coming to an end. They must ask you whether you want to opt in to be charged out of bundle. If you don't want to be defaulted to out of bundle billing, you can then exercise the right to buy a bundle. If you don't exercise the right to buy a bundle and you do not accept to be billed out of bundle rates, the operator must switch you off, or if they do not want to switch you off, they must let you continue using data services on the same terms and conditions that you were using them before that depletion happened. So Joy, those are the four key interventions that we have implemented. And perhaps, Chair, one of the things that one needs to highlight is the recent reports around the charging by some operators in respect of this measure. Chair, we did receive a notification of a tariff claim from one of the operators indicating that they will be charging for rollover of data. They will also be charging for transfer. And on receipt of that notification, we actually communicated to the licensee and requested that they explain to us how this charging will work. And I think our primary concern in this regard, Chair, is that by charging for these benefits, which in our view are the benefits that consumers ought to enjoy as a matter of law, they could in effect undermine the effectiveness of the regulations and make and basically render them meaningless. So we have written to them. They have responded as of close of business yesterday. We'll be considering the response, and I think in due course we'll make a determination as to whether there is anything that we can do to take the matter further. So from where we are sitting, as I said, we are concerned that the charging might effectively negate the regulations, and we're looking into the matter. The next section, Chair, talks to prioritization of the market. Councillor Mukhele has dealt with this in the earlier introductory slide. So we went through a process, Chair, to identify the markets that, in our view, are prone to anti-regulation, with a view that we can then undertake a specific review of the market in terms of the ECA and mount regulatory interventions in order to address competitive concerns. And the reason why we went through this prioritization exercise, Chair, is because our resources are extremely limited, so we needed to identify those markets that we think would be very material to government policy objectives, that would benefit the consumers the most, and that would have the biggest impact in bringing about competition in the market. And to that end, the prioritization exercise that we went through basically identified three markets in order of priority. The first being the mobile services, and we deem this to be a high priority based primarily on the policy directives that we received in 2016. From the then Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services around reduction of data costs. There was also a parliamentary inquiry before then which also made specific recommendations, not to mention the outcry from a number of consumer groups around the high prices of data services. The second priority will then be the wholesale fixed access, and the third will then be the upstream infrastructure market. And we will follow through that process. As I say, we have already commenced with the mobile services inquiry. We're hoping to have this completed in the next 8 to 12 months. We are mindful that it could take as long as 18 months, but we're doing our best to expedite it. I think the one thing that we needed to highlight as well, Chair, is that obviously this is one of those contentious issues, and we need data and support from industry players, and we are mindful of the litigious nature of our sector that depending on the outcome of this process, the benefits may be further delayed if there is litigation challenging the outcome. But it is a priority exercise for us in the current financial year, and we are expediting it as best as we could. The next issue that is critical to the discussion around cost to communicate, Chair, is the question pertaining to the licensing of spectrum. I think the committee would be aware that the litigation that we had with the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services following the publication of the invitation to apply in 2016 was resolved. So that litigation was settled. And subsequent to that settlement, We then had a draft policy directive that was issued by the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services in September last year. ICASA was consulted extensively during the process of the draft policy directive. We are now awaiting the final policy directive from the minister. So from where we are sitting, we are working internally to make sure that by the time the policy directive is published, we will be ready to commence with the licensing process. The other intervention that Councillor Mokgele alluded to pertains to the Competition Commission inquiry into data services market. I think the point that we wanted to highlight here, Chair, is simply that we have a memorandum of understanding with the Competition Commission. We've been working collaboratively with them in their inquiry process. We see our role and theirs as complementary, and we expect that the outcome of their inquiry will guide us, depending on when that inquiry gets completed, will guide us in terms of the recommendations that will come from there in respect of the sector-specific measures that we need to implement. Chair, that concludes the bulk of the details. I think I'll pause here and allow Councillor Mokgele to wrap up.
Yeah, I think to conclude, we've highlighted what we deemed to be successes in terms of the intervention by ICASA. The first one that we would like to talk to is the amendment of the End User Subscriber Charter regulations. We're hoping that it will address the rules regarding out-of-bundle charges and also data expiry. The second one, which we've achieved is the reduction of call termination rates, and we're hoping with the latest intervention the voice prices will go even further. The third is the prioritization of markets, which is actually quite fundamental because it sets the basis on which we prioritize areas that we will be intervening, specifically with the aim of reducing the cost to communicate. And the fourth one is the initiation of the market review, which we initiated last year. And as the CEO has indicated, we would like to finish it within 18 months, but there are other factors that could affect the work that we need to do if we actually dealing with a very litigious sector. So depending on the outcome of the inquiry, we might not complete the project
in
the time that we had planned as the regulator. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor, as well as the CEO. Well, I just need to get one clarity for allowing members to ask the question. I think you would have seen that at the beginning of the meeting, I tendered the apology of the minister, which is something that happens when the minister is unable to attend, both the minister, the deputy, and the DG. And on the side of the members, I did say, members are here full strength. Now, from your side, the chair of the board, his apology has not been tendered. I do not want to it would be good that we actually are informed why we do not have an apology if the chair is not present. How does your board operate? I assume that the person who naturally would lead delegations to a meeting where ICASA has been invited, it would be that person who is assigned that responsibility. Or how does it happen in ICASA?
Thanks, Chair. If I may offer an explanation, I've been delegated by the Chair to to lead the delegation. It might be an oversight on our part that we didn't communicate that in writing. There is a council meeting currently underway back home. So I've been delegated to represent ICASA today. Thanks.
Okay. All right. I know there are many questions that perhaps we should just deal with them, remove them from the platform before we delve into the meeting. This committee necessarily does not do oversight over ICASA per se, but some of the things that we find in the public space raises several concerns, and we can't ignore them. And I don't know whether you would be in a position to just clear our minds about how the law governing your entity would deal with the matter that confronts your organization, which creates a bad image of your organization about the chair. Look, he's a public figure. He's paid for by the state and should be governed by the relevant acts that deal with yourselves as councillors. Personally, I find it a bit odd that, and I don't know how you operate as colleagues, that you'll have a situation where your board member, your colleague, is found guilty and sentenced. We've learned to media, obviously, that he's challenging the sentencing and not the guilty verdict. But what does your act say? I mean, there are things that should occur naturally when you are found guilty to preserve the image of the organization. You've just earlier on alluded to the fact that you are, okay, the CEO was talking about yourselves working within a litigating environment and yourself as well litigating from time to time. There are these things that should be fundamental about the image of the organization to which, as individual councillors, you should be either advising each other or understanding what the law says. So what would you say is your understanding of what's happening in your organization with regards to the chair and what the law says about, for instance, if it were to be you, same situation, have you ever gone through the act and understand, have you been given advice by your legal team about what should be happening? Because I find it a bit strange that the country should be held at ransom by something that should have been resolved very clearly by what is stipulated in the Act. And I know I'm ambushing you in a way, but it's, you are a public person, you are public property, and we should be accounting for the oaths that happen in our spaces.
Thanks, Jen, and I do appreciate the difficulty and around the issue that you've just raised. ICASA's position, we've considered it as council. The position is that according to the law, we are not empowered to intervene. Only the minister can intervene in that regard. But to go to the specifics and the details of what the law says, I will hand over to the CEO and then later to ministry. to talk to the issue. But in the final analysis, as the board, we're not empowered to intervene. We have to get our direction from the minister.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, simply put, the matter pertaining to appointment, qualification, or disqualification of councillors and chairpersons is a matter that falls squarely within the realm of Parliament and the Minister. And the provisions of Section 6, read with Section 8 of the ICASA Act, are very clear that wherever there is a disqualification of either a sitting councillor or a sitting councillor or chairperson, it is Parliament that must then deal with the issue as the authority that is responsible for appointment of councillors. And once Parliament institute its proceedings in terms of the relevant provisions, the minister is then empowered to also act following the institution of the powers by Parliament. So from where we are sitting, Chair, we humbly submit that it is a matter that falls beyond the jurisdiction and mandate of the organisation. But having said that, I think it's fair to acknowledge that there's ordinarily going to be concerns about the legality of decisions that the organisation may take during this process while Parliament and or the Minister are yet to act. And to that end, we've gone an extra mile. We've sought legal advice, specifically to advise on the implications for the authority's decisions in this period. And the advice we have received is that council takes decisions as a collective. It is not the chairperson who takes decisions, neither is it a single councillor. And from that perspective, the advice is that we are adequately insulated from the legality perspective in terms of the decision that we have taken. We'd be more than happy to share the advice with the committee, and we got this advice when the matter first arose as far back as January last year before the sentencing. Thank you, Chair.
No, I did allude to two issues that I think you may not have understood, and I understand your response, but your response doesn't respond to the last question, CEO. What does the Act say? Just read the Act, because the Act is very simple. The legal advice may have been relevant the first time around, but that legal advice has fallen into the cracks currently. You can read those clauses.
I'll
come to you, Madam.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps let's start with Section 6 of the ICASA Act, which talks to disqualification. So 6 subsection 1 says a person may not be appointed as a councillor if he or she, I'm going to subparagraph J, has at any time been convicted, whether in the Republic or elsewhere, of theft, fraud, forgery, or uttering a forged document, or any other offence involving dishonesty, or an offence under this Act or the underlying statute. And then it goes on about...
Perfect.
So can I carry on, Chair?
Okay.
So that's Section 6. Then we go to Section 8, which talks to removal from office, which says, subject to subsection 2, a councillor may be removed from office on account of his or her being disqualified as contemplated in Section 6.1. I've read Section 6.1. So while you are a councillor, before you are a councillor, you cannot be appointed if you're convicted. But if you are a councillor and then during your term you are then found guilty of an offence, then it says you may be removed. And then it proceeds in 8.2 to say, a councillor may be removed from office only on a finding to that effect by the National Assembly, and b, the adoption by the National Assembly of a resolution calling for that councillor's removal from office. It then goes on in 8.3 to say, the minister may suspend, 3A, the minister may suspend a councillor from office at any time after the proceedings of the National Assembly for the removal of that councillor. In B, it says the minister must remove a councillor from office upon adoption by the National Assembly of the resolution calling for that councillor's removal. And then C says the minister must suspend a councillor from office at any time after the start of the proceedings of the National Assembly for the removal of that councillor upon the request of the National Assembly.
No. You see, the clause that you read in clause 6, seals the deal. You shouldn't have gone to the rest of other issues. Once you are found guilty, your qualification falls off. Once you are found guilty on the things that have been made, corruption, fraud, and whatever you are to, your qualification immediately lapses. Now, your counselor has been found guilty. He is not disputing the guilty aspect. He is disputing the sentence, which is a different thing altogether. The issue that you have raised of the, I mean, I can't remember whether it's counselor or yourself, CEO, who was trying to defend, and you said you are insulated. No, you are not. You are not, because you knowingly break the law yourselves now. All of yourself now decides to go against what is very clear to you as counselors. We dealt with some colleagues here, Julie in particular, with SABC. We advised SABC board members about certain things, and the decisions taken when certain things had happened. We advised them even, and I hope that the litigation that is going on is not funded by yourselves. I just hope it's not, because if it is, you surely would be collectively, you are likely to be held collectively responsible. I hope the gentleman is fighting that battle alone out of his own pocket. But you, ICASA is actually going against the law. That's all I can say. That's the advice I can give. And it does raise issues of a record. I think I'm right, but Julie, you had your hand up.
Chairperson, yes. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Chairperson, I'm extremely concerned, because as you correctly say, our experience at the SABC was similar. Now, the council in the case of ICASA, every decision that ICASA is taking, whether it is the review, a market review or whatever, it could be challenged based on the issue of the chairperson having been found guilty. My question to ICASA is twofold. One, can you give us the assurance that ICASA is not funding any legal costs for the chairperson? And secondly, have you had an urgent meeting, or did you call for an urgent meeting with a minister responsible for ICASA? The reason being that irrespective of the legal opinion, a legal opinion is just that. Every day the court sits and there are different people defending the the accused and those who are defending the other side. So it's a legal opinion. So a legal opinion cannot give you the protection as so-called being insulated. No, it's not going to be the case. It has not been the case in the case of the SABC, and it will not be the case. Yes, you operate as a collective, but the mere presence or participation of a person who should not be there could have an impact on all your resolutions. And as you have correctly said yourself, it's the litigious nature of the industry. Do not expose yourself to unnecessary litigation. And I want to know, where's the department in this exercise? It's the Department of Communication, obviously, because telecoms is not the responsible department at present. But can we please have an indication, Chair? What are the urgent steps? The National Assembly is going to close down on the 20th of March. We need a resolution as far as this matter is concerned before that date. I'm extremely concerned, Chair. We cannot allow this thing to stand over until a new parliament has been elected after 8th of May. This is a very urgent matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with almost everything that's been said here and the urgency of the matter. But given that we don't have oversight over ICASA, isn't it up to communications to be driving this issue forward? Thank you, Chair.
Madam Machine.
I wasn't going to get involved in this, but, you know, previously I have requested you numerous times for us to actually have an update on the broadcasting digital migration program, and you've declined to do so, saying that it wasn't our responsibility because it was under the Department of Communications. And here we are again with... And I'm not in any way disputing the seriousness of the matter, but here you are using this committee's time on an issue over which we have no say. You know, if I use your previous decisions on issues I've wanted raised, and you've dissed me off, saying it's not our department, it's not our responsibility, I said, but there's a memorandum of understanding between the two departments on who that we can actually interact with the ICASA, and you said no, they're not ours. So here we are, dealing with a very serious issue that isn't our responsibility.
Oh, now, Madam Mission, you are finding an opportunity to get at me. No. Let me perhaps there's a misunderstanding between the two of us. It is on record, I said, on the subject that you are talking about, unless it is something else, we convened a meeting last year. It fell through. The last week, I reported here, I even requested you, even in the last meeting last week, and said, Madam Sheen, please talk to your committee members in communications so that we have the meeting. I had scheduled the thing last year. I scheduled it. I thought me and you are singing to the same page. And I still would say, well, I don't know why you decided to take that angle, but it's fine. You know, you see where you're chairing, you must be prepared to face whatever music. But I think that was the understanding. This matter, we can't ignore it. It's not part of our mandate, but we can't ignore it. Because we'll be failing as Parliament when they are appearing before, we can't call them to come and deal with the matter. But they are here for something else. We can't ignore it. She's a councillor. We have a public responsibility as a committee to advise and to get to know. Because now they are here to present to us on a subject that belongs here. The chair is not here. That's a person mandated. Whether the chair has authority to assign someone when the chair's position is questionable and we simply shy away from it, it would be irresponsible. You can come back, Madam Shin.
Thank you, Chair. Then perhaps it would have been appropriate to invite the Department of Communications to come along to this meeting and give us their view on what action, if any, they have taken on this matter, because they should be driving it.
We will unfortunately not be in a position to call the department. We are here with them. We did not know. We did not know about the latest situation. By the time we drafted our program, has been drafted for a few months ago.
Chair, I was talking about the portfolio committee. They're supposed to be driving the issue, not the department.
Well, that's exactly what I was trying to explain earlier on, Madam Shin. That's exactly what I was trying to explain earlier on. But anyway, we have made our point. If you feel free to answer to Madam Julie, but the things that we are raising are very crucial, and it's important that you take note of what has been said. I think we've made our disclaimer at the beginning that it is not our mandate, but we can't just close our eyes, dig our heads in the sand when we know what may befall you come tomorrow. Baba CEO, Councillor.
Now we, ICASA notes the concerns that have been raised here. Just to respond to Madam Killian's questions, the first one, the authority is not carrying out any of the legal costs on behalf of the chairperson. And secondly, we haven't had an urgent meeting with the minister. The way that ICASA has always approached it is the way that the CEO explained in detail. We relied on Section 6 read with Section 8, and we also relied on the legal opinion. However, given the seriousness of this matter, I think we will have to take it back to Council, discuss it in detail, and also confer with the Ministry. And I think it's the Ministry that will then respond to the Portfolio Committee comprehensively on the issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
If I may just make one last comment, and I think from where we're sitting as an institution, it's important that we understand the effect and implications of the organization's continued operations under the current circumstances. I think the one section, Chair, that I perhaps ought to have mentioned as I was reading through the relevant sections is Section 13. And Section 13 talks to validity of proceedings of counsel. If I may read it to the members. It reads, subject to Section 12, and Section 12 deals with conflict of interest. It says, subject to Section 12, a decision taken by the counsel or an act performed under that decision is not invalid merely by reason of A, any irregularity in the appointment of a counsellor, B, a vacancy in counsel, or C, the fact that any person not entitled to sit as a counsellor sat as such at the time that the decision was taken. Provided such decision was taken by a majority of the counsellors present at the time and entitled so to sit, and those counsellors at the time constituted a quorum. So, Chair, I think all I'm saying, Chair, is the competency for removal and appointment is not ours. However, once that appointment has been made, we have to work within this framework. When an opportunity comes for a removal to occur again, while we're waiting for the relevant authorities to undertake their responsibilities, it's important that we secure the integrity of the decision-making process. And we have taken advice, again, within the parameters of the relevant provisions, and I think that's perhaps where I would leave it, Chair, with that reference. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We are going to step off the matter, but take the advice. The best thing you could do as councillors is to convene and interpret that act to yourselves. My advice would say, once the law, Chapter 6 kicks in, it's a very important Section 6. That deals with the qualification. These other things that the CEO is trying to read, that's how people try to defend indefensible issues and try and take a particular clause and make it more superior than the other. The fact of the matter, the man is disqualified, period. Now, it's either near Savannah, but the man is disqualified, period. If I were him, you know, I always wish that this, some of these things would happen to me, and unfortunately they don't. You make a good example as a public representative and stick by the rule. Resign. Step down so that you do not complicate the institution's progress. Anyway, questions, colleagues? Madam Tsotesi, Mama Julie, Baba Mackenzie, Mam Shin, Mama Ndongeni.
I know you have wrapped up the issue on the purpose. But before coming to my question, that's one question on the particular issue. That now that we have a councillor representing the chairperson, what will be the implications of responses on behalf of the chairperson?
You're asking a question to me. I'm accounting now to the committee.
Okay.
No, we are noting your, it's a very important question you are raising. But continue with the rest of the other questions.
Yeah, my first question, Chair, on the structures that serve the little court. We have here a tabulation of those structures. It's not number, but I think it's page 5, coming after page 4, about the factors that drive the data cost, and we have a tabulation here of those factors. And at the same time, we have a statement saying the Competition Commission, as well as ICASA itself, is still searching for the actual factors. And taking into consideration that even if we talk about the costs that are incurred by the operators for the infrastructure that they are seeking, but ultimately at the end of the day it is the consumer that is going to settle all the costs. And in light of that, I think it makes it important for us to be provided with a framework as to when are we going to get the income of the actual factors that are determining this cost. And slide 15, on the rollover of the data, that it is an incentive to consumers, you know, to be allowed to have the rollover. But at the same time, those incentives are taken back by the charges that are incurred when you do the rollover. I don't think really, it's a favorable, a situation that is favorable to the consumer. And we have here the figures in as far as the pricing are concerned, you know, the cost to communicate. But how transparent are the pricing to the consumers? How they know as to when are they, you know, when is the conducive time for them to use the cell phone? Like we have a benefit, like maybe 12 o'clock in the evening or very early in the morning. When is the conducive time, and when, how are they going to know of those benefits? And what could be the actual reasons or factors for the same operator charging different prices in different countries in the SADC? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to pick up where Honourable Tsotesi left off, and that is as far as the end user and subscriber charter regulations are concerned. Now, if you have received notice from a mobile operator that they intend to charge for the transfer or for the rollover, is there anything that you can change in the regulations? Can you publish additional regulations that you can in fact intervene to stop that, so that you immediately block any such sort of decision by a mobile operator to overturn the benefits of these end-user regulations. That's the first one. Second one is, it's very good to see the graph of the termination, call termination rates and the decline in costs. I can recall, Chairperson, at that time there was a little unease about you know, ICASA's role, etc., and Parliament and the executive shouldn't interfere, etc. But I must say, it's good to see that it had the impact. And therefore, it sometimes needs a little bit of a sort of a kickstart by Parliament to have these processes. And that brings me then to the issue of the intervention with the mobile market review. Now, I can recall when I was in the previous portfolio committee where ICASA reported, one of the challenges that ICASA usually faced was legal capacity. Because we all knew that the industry wants to take you on, etc., and they want to just check the slightest mistake in the process. Have you beefed up the capacity? Do you have a regular sort of the necessary muscle now? Does the industry respect you when you take these matters on? Because we want to see ICASA to really have the muscle and to do the right things. So please, can you give us the assurance that, in fact, you can drive these processes? And that then brings me just to your role vis-a-vis the Competition Commission's review. How do you approach it? You say you have a good understanding and a relationship, etc. I see Competition Committee Commission complained that they didn't have the resources at some stage and dragging. When is that process going to be through? And how does it impact, or how do you dovetail your market review? And please, we don't want to hear 18 months. We want you to succeed and to actually show muscle enough for the industry to know. Because, Chair, the problem is Chapter 10 is a very cumbersome process. And they must, you know, they must, it's a very, can I say, sophisticated, very high-level process. And any little thing that can go wrong, industry pounces on that. So can we hear from you that you committed, you have your ducks in a row, but how does it impact that you don't do, do it in your review what the Competition Commission has done? Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. McKenzie.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you to the councillors from ICASA. Firstly, I'd just like to congratulate you on your consumer-friendly market interventions, because I think they're long overdue and they certainly need it, and you are clearly you're acting in the interests of the consumers without necessarily hamstringing the industry. And on that note, I think, and nobody said it yet, you know, we've mentioned an MNO, but the media is full of Vodacom and a 49 Rand charge to roll over the data bundle. Doesn't that, in your view, go against the spirit of what you're trying to do? And I got the impression that with the ECA Amendment Act, that mobile network operators would be more warm and more friendly towards any government or Chapter 9-led initiatives to bring down costs. Have you engaged with Vodacom specifically on this matter? Did they give you any notification of what they intended to do, or was it just a sort of funny hunt for a day, as it were? Then, regarding your slides and the comparisons to prices, data prices and voice prices in SADC countries, if you could just give me an indication of the companies along your graph, how many mobile network operators are operating in those countries? You know, single operator, dual, or oligopoly? Then lastly, your licensing of spectrum and spectrum auctions. Can you tell me when, because clearly that, and we heard this during the hearings, that would have a big impact on the cost to communicate and would bring prices down. So obviously, in my opinion, the sooner we roll this thing out, the better. What sort of timeline do you have in terms of spectrum licensing, and when can we see that spectrum released to the market? Thank you, Chairperson.
Madam Shin.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the call regulations, the ICASA didn't lay down a lifespan of rollover data. You left that up to the operators to decide how long that would survive. Can you tell me why you did that, why you left it up to the operators to make that determination? Is that advantageous to the consumers? Then on the high demand spectrum, can you please explain the process that you've gone through with the allocation? Because you've had it from the president and the minister herself that fairly soon there will be an announcement on this. Can you tell me if you've gone back to the auction basis and also what the process really has been? Because the minister's draft policy direction was published in September, October? What has been the process since then? You know, the public input that you had in response to that advert, public engagement with the submitting people, and whether there's going to be a sort of final review of the plan before it is like formalized, gazetted, or whatever. If you can please just run us through that process. And I'd also like to know, because a lot of things have now fallen supposedly through the cracks now that the ECA bill has been suspended or withdrawn. Can you tell us if there was, during this public participation process on the direction, whether there was an appetite for the wireless open access network license? Because in our hearings on the bill, there were very few people who actually felt it was necessary to have a special license. Whether that has been discussed and is possibly included, whether the WOAN will actually happen under this regime as opposed to under the bill. If you can give us some indication on that. And also there was in the bill quite a strong push to separate the wholesale and retail operations of the mobile network operators. Can you tell us whether that's going to be resuscitated in any way during the... Are you anticipating an investigation into this or making that a regulation? What's going to happen to that? And any other aspects in the bill that have now been passed, if you think that there is justification to resuscitating them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member? We're fine. Madam, how am I doing?
Okay, thanks, Chair. On slide 5, factors that drive data cost, on the middle one, it says access to network, which is the factors that drive data cost, access to network infrastructure, the market market structure, market player behavior. To me, I'm not sure. Because if you said it's e-access to network infrastructure, so it must be, we must be suffer, the consumers must be suffer for the access of networks or the market structure. That's why I say I'm not convinced. If you can unpack, maybe I can hear, I'm not quite sure. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, and I think I should apologize that I did not give the department earlier the opportunity to speak after ICASA. I don't know, Madam DG of today here, whether there are things that you would have wanted to raise to accept my apology. Just leave my mind.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think I will not be in a position to speak on behalf of the Ministry regarding the issues of the Chairperson of ICASA. Suffice to say that there was media statement that the minister issued pertaining this matter, and where she indicated that her she really will rely on the proceedings of the portfolio committee to commence, in line with what the CEO was saying around sections 6 and 8 of the ICASA Act, that at this point in time she will not be able to act regarding that matter, but she will be guided by the proceedings as soon as this commence in terms of the portfolio committee now, on in line with section 8 of the ICASA Act. So I will not purport to speak on behalf of the minister or the ministry in that regard. Thank you.
No, I was not asking with regards to that matter. I was just asking for the brief that you are attending the meeting. No, that one was just almost a side matter. I thought there are things that you would have wanted to raise as part of the delegation of the department.
Oh, no, Chairperson. I think we will deal with some of the questions that have been asked that pertains to the department. I think we'll attempt to respond to those. Thank you.
I just have one question to raise, because on one side I must also manage the time of your responses. CEO, I want us to go to the comparison. Your international benchmark. When you do benchmarking, naturally you should be comparing apples with apples. Your demographics that you have chosen cannot give you the answer that you need. Why did you compare apples with cabbage? Look, if you look at SADC, you really look, if you do a comparison, your data must be similar. I don't know how you could compare South African pricing by the entities. Because what you did was to look at where your operators operate, I would assume. I mean, is that what you did? You're actually looking at how they operate in different settings that cannot be compared. You're talking about Botswana, the population there is now, I'm sure, 2 million, if they have, or at most 3 million. South Africa, 55. And Zambia, I don't remember quite well. Zimbabwe could be 20 or 30. Now, I'm saying you are comparing, your data is, there is nothing data-wise that informs your analysis. My view is that it's a wrong approach. You can bring that matter as a, just to say, within SADC and within BRICS, but even there, you still are comparing it's wrong, it's inappropriate data, unless if you qualify why you've used that data. Because I would say, for you to compare apples with apples, you look at a country which has the same similar demographics, you look at the population density, you look at the income levels, you look at all these other things that, unless perhaps I come from a wrong school, but that's how I thought. I mean, it's like taking Kaiser Chiefs and then compare them with another team somewhere, Lempumalanga edlala ku Kumvela League. Yeah, that's what you did here. You said the Chiefs can go play with the team and Ishaye. Look, last week, I can't remember if it was last week or the other week, but I pulled almost a sample of a country that is almost similar to South Africa. Take Singapore. No, not Singapore. Thailand. Thailand has similar demographics like South Africa. In terms of the population, in terms of the middle class, in terms of the income level, the GDP, and then the penetration differs quite substantially, and that it speaks to several issues. Could be policy issues, but indeed, you may not have the similar company operating in Thailand, for instance, but that company in Thailand operates in the same demographic situation as South Africa. Therefore, if you use the two companies, they may be Vodacom and Thaicom, whatever it is, but you'll then be comparing a company operating in the same demographics, and therefore, when you present your picture or try to influence whatever in a particular direction, at least you are using demographics that speaks to each other. But I'm just saying, for me, your approach is a bit problematic, but you understand it better. Yeah. It would have been nice, perhaps, for the future. You still use your SADC and your BRICS, but then you bring us a picture or whatever committee that will come in. You then bring pull up demographics, I mean a country with similar demographics. So take two or three countries almost in the same situation like ourselves. Then you can say, I'm looking at SADC, this is how we see ourselves. I'm looking at BRICS, but these are the other countries that have got similar demographics like ours, and this is how we're panning out. In that way, we will be much, much more educated. But it will also help you in executing your responsibility, because you'll actually be comparing apples with apples. It could just be one is green, the other one is red. But the ingredients are very close to each other. It's just the... Yeah. And then you are on the floor, yourselves and the department.
Yes, thanks, Chair. We will share the questions amongst ourselves. I will start with the first two questions that we posed, in relation to that slide that talks to the factors that drive data costs. Actually, these are input costs that dictate the final price that is charged by an operator. And we've presented this for illustrative reasons to indicate that generally when you're dealing with prices, these are the issues that influence the price. So it's actually then an inquiry, a Section 67 inquiry, that will identify specific factors that we need to intervene in. So essentially what happens with the Section 67 inquiry, you establish the effectiveness of competition in the market, and you establish which factors actually impact on that competition. And then the next stage is for you to then implement poor competitive measures. And that's where the issue that's been raised by Honorable Tsotetsi and Honorable Ndumyeni come into place. Because that once you've identified that competition is ineffective as a regulator, pricing is one aspect that we can deal with to be able to address competition matters. And then when it comes to pricing is another process altogether, where you will have to do a number of exercises including price modeling and the like.
it's a very, and I agree with Honorable Chilian, it's a very involved process. But for procedural reasons, you need to go through that. You need to go through an inquiry, establish if competition is effective. If competition proves to be ineffective, then establish the measures that you can implement. And once the measures have been implemented, that is when the consumer can see the actual benefit of the inquiry. Having said that, I'm going to hand over to my colleagues. The CEO can kickstart some of the questions, and Owen can then field some of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think perhaps let me just start with the question of rollover and the charging. I think there were questions raised by Honorable Sotetsi and Killian and Honorable McKenzie specifically on that issue. I think, as I indicated during the presentation, Chair, we also concerned that the charging has exactly the effect that Honorable Tutedi has mentioned, as well as the other members, that it may discourage the public, or rather it may prevent the public from enjoying the benefits that the regulations are meant to afford them, which is why we have started a process to engage with Vodacom to understand fully why they have opted to go this route. And I think, Chair, once we've considered their representations, we will then deal with it from a regulatory perspective. But I think it's also important, Chair, to highlight that the legality of this practice might be one thing, but the ethics and morality of it might be another. And perhaps this is where moral suasion, if one was to appeal to Vodacom's conscience, this is where perhaps that conscience could come in and people can reflect adequately on what the effect of this is. But it is certainly not a matter that we will leave lying down. So we will assess their representations. We will then make a determination on how we proceed. I think the question about whether we can change the regulations to say don't charge, I think Councillor Mokhele has dealt with it. The Honourable Killian herself outlined that Chapter 10 is a complex chapter of the ECA, and any time you want to deal with pricing, the law enjoins that you can only do it through that Chapter 10 process. And we've deliberately stayed away from pricing issues in amending the end user and subscriber service charter, because it was really meant to be a consumer protection measure to deal with the business rules. And the minute we go into pricing, we would then probably just undermine the legality of the entire amendment. So the pricing issue will follow, hopefully, through the process that Councillor Mokhele is leading of the mobile services inquiry. There was a question about the legal capacity of ICASA and our resources, whether or not industry respect us. I think capacity remains a challenge. We have resources that we need to carry on operating, but we can do with more. And I think the department is fully aware of the constraints that we face. We have had numerous engagements with them. And where we are not able to complete the work with internal resources, we then resort to getting external support. In the ordinary course of business, like all other entities, we have a panel of attorneys where we get supporters and when we go along. So we could certainly do with more resources, but we're currently capacitated such that we're able to drive the mandate that we need to drive. The question about the Competition Commission process and when is that likely to come to an end, I think, Chair, from where we are sitting, the indications we had previously received were that the process would be completed by the end of the financial year. But I think with the latest pronouncement, it's becoming quite clear that that timeline might not be met. However, we see our processes as being complementary. Our process doesn't depend on the Competition Commission process to come to an end in order for us to start. So we will carry on with the Mobile Services Market Inquiry, and in that process, we will be consulting extensively with the Commission to allow them to also give us input in terms of some of the recommendations that are likely to come out from their process that require the sector-specific regulatory interventions. Owen will deal with the different prices by operators in different countries. He'll also deal with the benchmarks, Chair. The question on spectrum licensing in terms of the timelines and what process ICASA has undertaken, Chair, I think in terms of public process, the only thing that we have done is the withdrawal of the 2016 ITA in order to allow, at least against the backdrop of the settlement we had with the minister, to allow for the policy direction process to ensue. And that process, as I said, is run from the department. There was a draft policy that was issued. I think I'd leave it to my colleagues to comment on the input in terms of whether there was support for the wholesale open access network or whether there wasn't. But from our process, what we have done from a regulatory front, we have progressed the work relating to the radio frequency migration plan and the radio frequency assignment plan, in order to ready ourselves for the licensing process. The council committee that was constituted to drive the licensing process in 2016 has been revived, and all the back-end work that needs to be done, whether preparing the terms of reference for the appointment of the auctioneer or revisiting the work that was done at that time in light of the latest developments that have taken place, that back-end work is ongoing. The day we get the final policy directive, I think we will then outline the step-by-step guide as to how ICASA will then proceed with the licensing process, including the tentative timelines that we will be working towards. There was a last question asked about the functional separation and accounting separation of some of the players, and whether that would still proceed in light of the amendment bill now having been shelved. Chair, I think my response to that, Chair, is that in terms of the current legislation, accounting separation and or functional separation is a remedy that ICASA can impose after following a Chapter 10 process. So in terms of the inquiry that is underway, if we get to the end and we find that there are indeed competition problems and it is deemed that the appropriate remedy in that instance could be accounting separation or functional separation, the legislation does give the regulator the power to impose such a remedy. Thanks, Chair. I think I'll pause here and allow Owen to deal with the other question before we hand over to you.
Before Owen comes in, CEO, it was very interesting to listen to your contradictions. I wanted to come in, but I just felt, no, let me allow you to finish. But have you picked up your contradictions? You didn't?
No, Chair.
You see, when you dealt with the issue of the chair, you took out the rule book and you left morality out and ethics. When you dealt with Vodacom rollover, you took another rule book and you throw it. So be consistent, Chief. Let wrong be wrong. It doesn't matter whether it involves your kid or your neighbor and or your enemy, it must just be the same. Owen?
Okay, thank you, Chair. I think I'll start with the easier questions, the low-hanging fruit. I'll start with the easier questions, the lower-hanging fruit. The first question I would like to respond to is on the factors that drive data cost, on whether these are the factors which we know that they drive data cost in South Africa, and whether these are the only ones. On that slide, I think we're trying to showcase at a higher level what are the theoretical factors which actually drive data cost. But now the market inquiry, which we're doing now, is going to pinpoint exactly which ones are actually driving, high data cost in Africa. So the list which is there on that slide is not exhaustive. And although we have listed some of the factors which we think drive, data cost in theory, they might change as we are going through the process when we're looking at the actual factors that drive data cost. So it might increase, it might decrease, or some will fall away. So going back now to also link it to the question to say that the other factors which are highlighted, like the access to network infrastructure, the market structure, and the market behavior. I think for us putting them there, we're just highlighting that like at a high level, We know that these might be some of the factors of which we are concerned about them. So in this market structure, obviously, as we pinpoint these factors, they're going to inform which pro-competitive remedies are going to put in place to deal with these factors for us to be able to drive the price of data down. And then to the question with regards to how many operators in each country as far as the benchmark is concerned. We have a detailed, a benchmark which we did. It's unfortunate that maybe some of the data are contained in the detailed benchmark research which we published, and we didn't include that information on the slides which we shared with the committee. But the number basically ranges from 2 to 9, especially on the SADC countries which the question emanated from. For example, Angola had 2 operators, which we looked into. Then Botswana had 3, DRC had 9, Lesotho had 2, Madagascar had 4, and so forth and so on. But maybe if the committee wants us to provide the detailed information as far as the market structure, the number of operators is concerned, we will be able to do so because we have that information already, or maybe we can just share the detailed benchmark report with the committee. And then with regard to the question on the basket which you used as far as the benchmark is concerned, this is vis-a-vis the question which came from the chairperson to say, are we comparing apples to apples or comparing bananas with apples? I think your observations and assertions are correct. But however, I think also because we are presenting from the slides and not from the detailed benchmark report, I would like to actually confirm that we actually looked at all the sectors, including demographics, also things like the GDP, economic, sectors, a spectrum which has been assigned in different countries. So if you go to the detailed benchmark report which you did, it actually goes on to tell you, for example, where you pick a basket to the South Africa versus certain countries. We have a table where you say name of the country, then you've got the market structure, tells you how many operators are there, then population size, GDP per capita, and then you go on to the type of spectrum which has been allocated. But however, what we discovered now when we're doing that exercise was that there was no correlation between the pricing and the population size. So, for example, you can pick a country maybe with low population sizes and their prices. We're not able to actually derive a relationship to say maybe if you've got a lower population size, then your prices are lower or they're higher. So the major driver which we saw, as we call it in our benchmark report, was that we saw that in countries where spectrum has been rolled out, like most spectrum has been rolled out in South Africa, they had actually lower prices than South Africa. And also the second issue which we also observed was that in the market, for example, DRC, where there are like 9 operators in South Africa, they had lower cost than us. And in Tanzania, where they had almost 8 operators, they had actually lower cost than us. So we went on to conclude that like those are the factors which you think at a higher level, they were actually driving the price. Both we could draw a correlation between the assignment of spectrum, whereby where more spectrum has been allocated, the prices were lower. Where there were more operators, the prices were also lower. But the market review, which we are going to do now, which will also lead to the cost study, will actually unpack these issues with Africa and then to see what is the real cause and how then we can come in and enforce provocative remedies to make sure those prices are down. But we are happy to share the detailed benchmark report with the committee. It justifies every basket we have taken. For example, if you go to BRICS, why we have chosen BRICS, why we have chosen, for example, countries where South African MNOs have got a footprint in. And then we also, it's like I don't want to look at SADC because obviously South Africa belongs to that geographical, a grouping. And if you look, some of these countries are also the countries which were used by different experts when there were a lot of benchmarks floating around in South Africa with very high prices. So obviously we're also looking at the same countries, but also looking at the countries which make logical sense. But when it comes to benchmarks, they also have that weakness that you can never find a country which is comparable to South Africa as far as the economic factors are concerned, the cost structures are concerned, the population is concerned. Like there will always be those shortcomings, but you try as much as you can to find a logical mechanism which you can use to actually have your basket so that it also makes sense. But those will always put them up front that these become then our limitations. And then on the question on the differences in the cost of doing a business, why there's a difference in terms of cost doing business between countries, I think it's like the same factors which I'm highlighting here, which we use in the benchmark report. For example, we know that if you allocate spectrum, then it means obviously it becomes more efficient or loud infrastructure, then obviously it becomes easier to actually it reduces the cost of providing the service. But also there are economic factors. For example, different countries have got different inflation rates, they've got different electricity prices, for example. So there are a lot of things cost which goes into providing the service. So for example, it's like countries always have different input costs. So the differences in cost structures also, have a major bearing on why the prices, will always be different. Also, the issues to do with policy. Different countries have got different policies on a lot of things. Also, regulation. So there are lots of reasons why that will be different. But those, I think, which I'll just stick to, are the ones which we looked as far as our benchmark study is concerned, which was the market structure, the population size, the GDP, spectrum which has been allocated, also looked at differences in regulation and also in policy and stuff like that. I think those are the differences. So the same differences which you use to put your basket together are the same differences which actually determine why or give you the reasons why there will always be those different prices as far as different countries are concerned, even though some of the operators, they might have a footprint in all those countries, but the cost of doing business will always be different. I think I'll just end there.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just speak. Chairperson, I'll just speak briefly to the process for the completion of the policy direction to ICASA on the licensing of high-demand spectrum, and will not be, at this point in time, go into the content of what that policy direction will look like. Suffice to say that we, from the department side, haven't received the inputs from stakeholders on the draft that was issued previously. We have completed the analysis report emanating or stemming from the input that was received. And in the main, that report looks at the three areas, the technical aspects, because the policy direction when it was issued, it was accompanied by the CSR study. So the comments from the submissions that was received, they are in three areas essentially. The technical issues, specifically that speaks to the CSR report, they speak to the policy aspects, they also talk to legal issues, you know, so the analysis report also is responding to those. We've just extracted those matters that have been shared with the minister with a view to us redrafting that policy direction, and those are the matters that will be considered once the draft is finalized, and that draft, Chairperson, will be shared with ICASA. We must not coordinate, but we must consult with ICASA on the finalization of that draft policy direction. But the main issues there is to look at the policy objectives in the main, one being that of promoting investments in the sector, to look at issues of universal access, to look at issues of transformation and enabling other players to also enter the sector. So overall, those will be the basket of issues that will be looked at as the draft policy direction is finalized with the view to issuing it to ICASA. I think there is a commitment from the department side to finalize that as soon as possible. However, from where I'm sitting, I will not be able to speak again on behalf of the minister to indicate when that is going to take place. So for now, this is where I will leave it at, Chair. Thank you.
Madam Councillor, you wanted to say something?
I was actually going to direct the CEO to the rest of the questions. There are questions that were raised around why we left it to the operators to determine the iterations of all over. There was also a question asked around transparency of pricing.
Thank you, Chair. I think just to deal with the first one around why did we leave it to the discretion of the industry, I think, Chair, it was a very difficult decision to make because we were mindful not to get into the realm of regulatory overreach. So as we sit here, there are different packages in the market with different validity periods. If we were to venture into determining how many times the rollover of each ought to be, I think we would possibly find ourselves in a space where we are then accused of undue interference and of limiting innovation. So we thought it would be best to leave it to competition to decide whichever offers the best format or the best solutions in the market will then be the winner. That was primarily the reason why we decided not to be prescriptive. However, even after having decided not to be prescriptive, we then consciously made the statement that we will monitor how the regulations are implemented by the different operators, again to assess whether indeed the implementation supports the spirit and purpose of the regulations or whether it seeks to undermine it. So we will be monitoring this and see if indeed the flexibility that we thought we are affording industry is exploited. If we need to then review the regulations, we will do that. In terms of transparency, I think, Chair, one of the things that the regulation seeks to, or rather the amendment regulation seeks to implement, is to compel operators to be transparent. So in addition to the consumers being informed of what the price of what they are buying is upfront, the notification requirement that compel operators to alert consumers at different stages of depletion is primarily meant at ensuring that there is transparency around the charging. So every time you get to 50%, you are then afforded the opportunity to understand how much you are left with. And we think the regulations will then go a long way in that respect, over and above the different measures that the operators have implemented. Thank you, Chair.
Baba McKenzie, it's 4:01.
Thank you. Sorry, if you could just help me. Thank you for the very comprehensive response to all the questions. Just the one on spectrum. Assuming on the 9th of May there's some person that recognizes my talent and appoints me as Minister of Communications, I issue that policy directive on the 10th of May to ICASA, release the spectrum. Can you tell me how quickly you can run an auction? Will it take a year? Will it take 18 months? Will it take 2 years? You've told me your preparedness in terms of the back office. I want to, if I issued that directive on the 10th of May, by when could you have an auction and by when could you free up the spectrum? Best case scenario. Thank you, Chief.
Mr. McKenzie, you actually do stand that chance. Just join the ANC. You're on the floor. Okay, thank you, Chair.
I'm going to hold you to it. Just a simple.
But I think it's a difficult question to respond to, and perhaps at the risk of being accused of being evasive, let's just paint a scenario. Mm-hmm. So the draft policy, let's work on the draft policy directive that came out, just to get a sense of the timeline. The draft policy directive contemplates that there will be a wholesale open access network operator licensed. It also contemplates that there will be an individual network service operator licensed as a new entrant. It then contemplates that certain spectrum will go to the WAN and some of the spectrum will go to the industry. So the question that one has then is, what would be the sequencing of these processes? So for one, if we were to license an individual network service operator from scratch, a new entrant, I'm not even talking the WAN, just going purely on the draft that we saw in September, that process on its own will not take less than 12 months. And with drawing experience from the process that we ran during the licensing of Neotel, during the licensing of Cell-C, so that process alone will take no less than 12 months. And then that entity must then be afforded the opportunity to compete for the spectrum. So that in a nutshell, Chair, perhaps just highlights some of the key dependencies in this process. If you were to divorce the two processes and you were to take the view that says you must have certain spectrum specifically reserved for the players that are existing in the market, and all you then need to do is run that licensing process as a matter of agency, I think perhaps you might be looking at a different timeline. But I think it's a very difficult question to answer, Chair, in the absence of all the clarity being provided. Colleagues, I guess we are done. Are you related to Judge Webb? No, I'm not, Chair. Okay. You are not a mini lawyer as well? I studied law, Chair, in my past life. But in my current life, I'm not a lawyer. I take advice from lawyers on legal matters.
Owen, do you conduct the study yourself, or you someone external does the studies for you? Is it a desktop? I assume you do a desktop analysis, isn't it?
For your
benchmarks?
For the benchmark, it's an internal research of the team. We've got a division called the Policy Research and Analysis, and there are economists and other people with different skill sets, so we use internal resources.
Can we then request that you share with us the information as you had promised? And because you are doing this thing internally, I would like you to pull Thailand. Look at the demographics of Thailand. It's indeed the issues could just be policy, where we may have differences, and I don't know how many players there are. But the demographics are interestingly similar to us. If you were to pull that and put it on a test and then share with us the results. But I like the things that you have raised, because you are saying it's actually not the incomes, it's not the whatever, it's actually the spectrum issue that impacts on the prices. But and I wish that the department is listening to you, because there will be one department tomorrow when Mr. McKenzie becomes the minister. The issue of spectrum, which obviously is also held back by Madam Shin's outcry of migration, is a serious matter. I mean, the country, which is supposed to be the leading economy in the continent, is lagging far behind. It's actually an embarrassment. So with your colleagues in communications, if really this thing were just to be handled as a project, we will
I think the future committee would be appreciate that intervention. We've come to the end of our meeting, past one, the meeting's end agenda. Thank you.
Just a small matter of housekeeping. Minutes of the meetings previously, we haven't seen minutes for ages and ages. Do you know when we're going
to get it? It's not true. I think we only how many minutes? Two. Today is the first meeting that we only have two. The rest were dealt with. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.